Welcome to this special boxing edition of the Urban Sports Scene. Family, I am excited. We have some awesome guests to introduce. But before we get to that, Wole, knock out the particulars, brother.
All right. So now you put it up. I thought it was just, isn't it your turn? It's my turn?
It is, man.
It really is?
Oh, you got the Empire Media host.
Oh, really, yes, right. Okay, you called me off guard. Okay, my bad, bro. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kahn Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Football Team Insider John Kahn, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene.
And you also know this show can be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app and hear all the Empire Media shows as well as other great content.
And don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
All right, fam. Like I said, I'm excited. Let's introduce the fellas. First, we got my man Al Jones. Al, this is my first time meeting you. Ray, what's good, brother? Let's go to boxing.
Hey, thanks for having me on, fellas.
Al is, of course, from the world-renowned radio show In the Ring with Al Jones. Again, good to have you, brother. And joining us from cool Las Vegas, no longer hot Las Vegas, we got my man Johnny Sig. Johnny, what's up, baby?
It's a pleasure to be on today, fellas. Thank you for having me on.
No doubt. Of course, we got the homie from the Quarterly Report. He's always on with us. He's family now. Armand Lee, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Hey, man, can I just say this real quick?
Oh, yeah.
I love the way y'all did that intro, man. Y'all like Styles and Kiss circa, like, 99, 2000. I was passing it off. I was like, okay, y'all, official. So I had to drop that love.
Oh, man.
Nice. Hey, I'm going to go Capone and Noriega. Somebody close.
I'm a locks dude. I'm cool with that. We saw what happened in Versus. Let's go with Styles and Pete,
Cool and Dre. Somebody closer to my skin tone, baby.
Oh, maybe, go ahead, bro.
Maybe even All the Smoke. We got that. We kind of
got that vibe. We got that vibe.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah. Kwame roasted them. I don't want to be associated with that.
It's a little different now.
And of course, I don't know who he represents. Is he representing the A's? He representing the OH? We got Bite Down Boxes. Reginald Woodson, what's good, man?
I thought that was off-camera stuff, man.
Hey, we're missing. Hey, we're missing. Put that work in, though. Michigan, put that work in, though.
Right. Yeah.
There we go. That's the crew. We may have one other brother joining us, but fellas, let's jump right into it. Wole, you want to start with Usyk Joshua? I know everybody
talking about the fallout from that fight, it is what it is. All right, so in Wembley Stadium, Usyk defeated Anthony Joshua with unanimous decision to become the unified heavyweight champ. To me, in that fight, I'm Usyk was just that dude, bro. He really was, and it's wild that we kind of forget where a boxer was in the past, because before, Usyk was talked about as a top 5 pound for pound boxer, you know what I'm saying, within the cruiserweight division. Then obviously, he moved up in weight, and it's, his first fight in the division. A couple fights weren't as spectacular, but you still saw the skill set and you saw what he can do. And it's something that, Anthony Joshua, as great as he has been in terms of having professional fights, he's not where Usyk is, you know what I'm saying? So you just saw to me the better boxer, win that fight compared to where Anthony Joshua was. And then there's no knock on Anthony Joshua. I think a lot of people were like, oh, you lost to Usyk or whatnot. But to me, when you look at Usyk and his body of work, because it's all about body of work, man, dude is like that. It is what it is. He fought a good fight, and it'd be great. I mean, to me, it'd be great to see a rematch. But I don't think Anthony Joshua, if I'm him, is something to look at like I lost to a terrible boxer. You actually lost to one of the best boxers in the world.
True.
I think that's a very great point. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely a great point. I mean, who knew those? I mean, the world was, they had no idea that Usyk had like 300 amateur fights.
Yeah.
He was a gold medalist in the Olympics. And being at the cruiserweight division doesn't get that much publicity.
Mm.
So it was almost a shock to the world to see Usyk come in, and he was like 18-0, so he doesn't have a you know, a resume per se, you know, besides publicly for the world to know. He doesn't have that resume where everyone like knows about. He's not a household name at all until last Saturday when he became a household name with the punishment that he put on Anthony Joshua. Anthony got caught up trying to slug, and you know, it didn't work. He looked stiff. He lost that eye of the tiger. I mean, it was just I was very disappointed in that performance. And to go back on what you just said earlier, I don't think a rematch is good for Joshua right now. You know, he might need to take a little break, take a step back a little bit, because this is not an Andy Ruiz situation.
Facts.
You know, nope, you know, facts. So I really, it's going to be interesting the next 6 months how they play out.
And John, I don't know.
John, you said you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I'll throw it out there. I think that the southpaw stance of Usyk was a big complication for Joshua. He was not throwing the right trajectory of shots, in my opinion. Should have been using the right hand more. Instead, he was trying to jab with him. And, you know, we always say this in the sport of boxing, you know, behind the scenes, is that size matters in porn and combat sports. So I thought, incorrectly so, that Joshua's size was going to be a factor. Excuse me. But then I realized that Usyk's left hand stance, his southpaw stance, was difficult for Joshua to adjust to. You could see that their legs got caught up a lot. And the thing for a southpaw fighter like Usyk, in my opinion, is that they're accustomed to facing traditional fighters. Right-handers, not so much. They don't really know how to like face southpaw fighters on the regs. And that, I think that showed up here. Joshua, I got to give props to. I'm a big fan. You know, obviously when he had the fight with Klitschko, that was a big thing that he had to come back from, man. He dealt with some significant adversity and intestinal fortitude for days, man. And then, you know, the thing with Andy Ruiz when he came back. And if you look at it in hindsight, always being 2020, Joshua won that fight. I hate to sell any fighter out. I think it's because Andy Ruiz did not train well. No excuses for anyone. It's a boxing match and there's millions of dollars at stake. But I kind of saw that Joshua, like, wasn't as good as a lot of people thought in that fight. And my man Wally, like, he told me what's up. Like, he was like, he told me what time it is. He's like, Usyk. And so I'm gonna eat crow. I've been picking some wrong ones lately, guys. So whenever I pick a fight, just bet against who I'm picking nowadays. Because I'm all sorts of wrong.
Hey, Armand, I think you had something you wanted to say as well.
Yeah, man, you know, I find it interesting, the whole Usyk and Anthony Joshua, the whole dynamic, right? And I think on a macro level, it probably speaks to the ignorance of the American boxing fan.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of people who were like, I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show, but when you look at the coverage that, you know, a YouTuber got over the summer, and, you know, God bless him, and Evander Holyfield, and then last weekend, we had a new heavyweight champion. And this is a guy who cleaned out the cruiserweight division. So, Ray, Wole, you guys know I've been a big Usyk fan for years now. And I remember when it was clear he was going to move up. This is probably about like 4 years ago or whatever. I was like, man, Usyk, when he gets it underneath him, gets it comfortable in the heavyweight division, he's going to run the division. I remember saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we saw the Chisora fight. We saw some of his earlier fights in heavyweight. And it was clear that the power, at least initially, didn't move up. And I still don't think his power, he has that pop at heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you look at their faces after the fight, like, it was clear AJ wore his face out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But the skillful boxing that Usyk has, you know what I'm saying? And we'll see. His body fills out, but he just didn't bring that pop with him. I think the sky's the limit, and it's always been for him. The interesting thing for me is when you look at AJ, right? Because through all the flaws that we can see, again, I think someone said stiff, and that's probably the best way I would describe AJ now. I want to say, like, after the Parker fight, it was as if they were trying to change the tire while driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like his ability, that aggressiveness. Right. And I don't, maybe aggressiveness is the wrong term because he had a huge output last Saturday. But it's like, you see him like, he was pawing a lot. And I'm like, bro, you got all these muscles. Obviously you have power, but it's as if he doesn't necessarily know. It's as if he's thinking, you know how what cornerbacks or football players say, like when you start thinking on the field, that's when you make the mistake. I watched Anthony Joshua and it's like, he's at one of those boxing classes and he's trying to get the footwork down and then throw the straight. And I'm like, bro, you big Vlad, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't argue with AJ's resume. Like, when you, as heavyweights, you look at what he's done compared to anybody currently.
No doubt.
It speaks for itself. But it's as if, like, the confidence and him trying to be a fighter that he's not. He's literally, like, the opposite of Deontay Wilder, right? Where Wilder just is like, dog, I'm strong. I'm going to punch your lights out. AJ is trying to be, like, the boxer puncher. But he's just not there yet, and it's almost holding him back. So, to me, the interesting thing is AJ, because as far as I'm concerned, Usyk, this has been kind of the trajectory that he's been on.
So, Wood, you got anything you want to add to that?
Man, don't put me behind Armand no more. I mean, hey, bro, I got to scrap all my notes.
No, I'm sorry.
I thought this was a lose. I gotta get in my bag now. I thought this was a lose situation for AJ, because if he would have beat the smaller man, people would have written it off as him just beating the smaller man, and that based on the two previous Usyk performances at heavyweight, that's what should have happened. And then can we get the winner of Fury and Wilder?
Yep. Yeah.
Then he comes into this situation and he actually loses the fight. I think where he really messed up was when he came in and settled in right in front of Usyk right away, I was like, bro, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you need to let him come to you and react off of that. And then hopefully build up an amount of punishment on the man in the first 5 to 6 rounds and maybe take away his fight, any threat from him late. But when he jumps in and is standing toe-to-toe with this guy with the power stuff that Armand just mentioned, I'm just like, this is not the pace that you want to be at. This is not the tactically, you've really messed up. And I don't know how you back away. Like, I don't know how he changes tactics in the middle of this fight. So now, kind of jumping ahead to having a rematch, because at no point in this fight did you just flat out become turn the boxing into a brawl or a fight. Now he faces a situation in a rematch, if they get it done, where you actually have to go to him now because you got to beat the champ, or whatever the hell that saying is. You got to beat the champ to beat the man, or beat the man. Now you've taken that situation away from you, where even the judges couldn't help him out because he chose to he had the wrong tactics in that fight with him trying to go to him. So now that I just don't know how he rebounds from this. But the only thing is, the rematch can still be sold because we think that he can get it right. But like John just mentioned, if we really look closely at the rematch with Andy Ruiz, we don't really have a great track record on him in rematches, if we want to look at it that closely. But I think most of us, because he's one of the few boxers, along with Canelo, he's one of the few boxers that can get 35, 60, 70,000 into an arena. They can still put it together. There can still be that bit of suspense that they can sell to the public. And I thought somebody hit on it before, but I think the rematch can still work and he can have a fight after that, because if he loses to this guy, they can just say, well, that was a bad style matchup for him. That southpaw stance is not a lot of southpaw heavyweights. So he can lose to Usyk one more time conceivably and still come back and have a good one more good fight, I think.
But someone but I got a question for you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Johnny. What's your question?
The bell that rang at the end of the 12th round of that fight saved Joshua's ass.
Oh, definitely.
Like that early bell, like, because I'm watching the fight. I'm like, damn, Usyk might stop this guy right now. And then next thing you know, it's like the bell sounds. I looked at the clock and it was at like 10 seconds. I'm like, whoa, there's another 10 seconds here. You know, another 5 seconds, any second in that fact is that Joshua might have ended up in the second row. The ropes were holding him up. So there was some home cooking going on over there in the UK. Like, not to be like, you know, that guy, but I got to, you know, I saw it. My wife
saving the bag.
They were like, ding, ding. Let's get him out of here.
And he heard me like, I got to save the bag.
Yeah.
But
also, you got to take in consideration, whenever you fight in a southpaw, you always lead with your right hand.
Yes. I mean,
he wasn't doing that at all. You're always supposed to lead with your right hand when you're fighting a southpaw. All of that little pat and pity pat that he was doing with his left, it wasn't setting anything up. I got his corner has to take some of this responsibility.
There it is.
You know, no one in the corner tried to help him make adjustments. All right. Yeah. I didn't see him making any adjustments. He stayed with the same game plan. And he is supposed, I mean, he's 6'6", 240. He is supposed to walk him down. He is supposed, Joshua can't fight on his heels. And you know that. So he was supposed to be a whole lot more, he wasn't aggressive at all in that fight to me. I didn't see the aggression. I didn't see the eye of the tiger. I know he's a brand now, but and that has come to hurt him.
I think so.
You know, he needs to get back to Anthony Joshua, the Joshua that fought the Klitschkos, the Joshua that became a heavyweight champion. That shit he's doing now, I don't know who – I didn't know who he was in that ring.
Mm. Armand, did you have something to add, brother?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm just saying the same thing that we've all kind of said. Like, when you watch AJ fight, he's like the 5'2 baseball player. He's got all everything you would want. And then you're like, bro, why are you playing at the – why are you trying to bunt when you at bat? You know what I mean? Like, the thing that was most – again, we've all said it. The pawing, like, I don't know what he was doing. Like, you are carrying that length, that size, that power. Why are you playing? And and this corner gave him no type of benefit. The corner's on in there saying that he's doing well. And like you said, they're not giving any adjustments on the fly. I don't know. Maybe it's the. I mean, he's incredibly wealthy. He's probably what? I mean, the Zone and Hearn Matchroom, they haven't really announced, at least to my knowledge, what the details of this latest contract. He's got the Beats by Dre. He's got the vitamin water. I mean, again, he's a brand now, right? Yeah. And it's a bit disappointing because when you look at the heavyweight division, it could be what we all probably remember, at least definitely in the late 90s, where you have all these different guys, all these different exciting styles. I'm not going to take anything away from AJ from losing to Usyk because, again, I've always felt that Usyk had the ability to be special. Mm-hmm. You can't lose like that. You feel me? Like, it looked like you were just confused. And I go back to that Parker fight, man. I remember watching the Parker fight being like, okay, they're clearly trying to work with AJ. But it's never really felt natural since then. You know what I mean? And I think they probably have done more harm than good for him as a heavyweight champion.
Was anybody shocked that Chisora
was
able to be more of a threat late into the fight than AJ? That's what I'm sitting here looking at. Like, Chisora, you know, he was a few steps slow and whatnot, but he at least had the timing to wind up and take that big, that long-ass overhand right he kept throwing. At least he could set something up. But for AJ, he was just completely baffled by the in and out, the resetting, the footwork. He didn't have no idea whatsoever how to get that right hand out to him. But I will say, in his defense, Dorticos in the World Boxing Super Series finale, he couldn't touch him with his right hand. Gassiev, he couldn't do nothing with it. I mean, we haven't seen anybody land flush right hands or multiple flush right hands on Usyk.
Yo, I want to jump
in the southpaw.
I'm gonna jump in real quick. One is Anthony Joshua did acknowledge before the fight he did not have a lot of experience fighting southpaws, so that definitely it hurt him. But I also noticed his energy after the fight. Now, remember when he lost to Ruiz, he said, "Man, I'm gonna beat him up in the next fight." Like, he was confident. He knew he just got caught. But this time, he didn't seem as sure that he could win in a rematch. No, he looked very unsure, and he got his eyes shut for the first time. I think it definitely baffled him because he's like, wait a minute, this was not supposed to happen. Mm. I want to give a shout out to JoJo Diaz, because when I interviewed him years ago, he said a career defining moment for Errol Spence was when he went to the UK and he knocked out Kell Brook. Mm-hmm. And Usyk goes to the UK in front of 66,000 people, and he beats Anthony Joshua when it was the AJ show. Everybody on social media is showing love to Eddie Hearn for how he just put on a spectacular AJ phenomenal event.
The intro AJ and everything.
AJ's in fire. And you going in, I mean, we showed our age before the show. Like, this was some Rocky stuff.
It was some Rocky stuff.
You go to this man's hometown and you knock, I mean, he knocked him out. But like Johnny said, that bell saved him. So what Usyk achieved is just historical, man. And it shot him up the pound for pound list so fast with that one victory. And now I think this is just going to catapult him to superstar status. You guys, what was the magnitude of this win, considering the amount of people was there during COVID, by the way, and also the fact that it was in the UK? And how does now, I think, Usyk dictate the rematch negotiations? Because he's like, we coming to the Ukraine with this next one. I came to your hometown. Come over here and fight me. But Eddie Hearn's like, no way.
Yeah, he's
not trying to mess up his brand. I'll let you handle that one first, bro.
it's definitely... Well, he's already executed the
rematch clause. Yeah.
He's already executed his rematch clause. So that's happening. The location is up for grabs at this point. Mm. I mean, and Usyk has, being the champ, he has the right. He should have that right as the champion to dictate where the fight is. And unfortunately, Eddie Hearn has to go and pay attention. He has to adhere to that. Now, one thing that Eddie Hearn did wrong, I really believe he did wrong in this particular situation, is the week of, he re-signed Anthony Joshua to another contract extension. I would have almost waited. I think that was a distraction. I would have almost waited to the announcement or we can take care of that after the fight. Or we can take care of it. I mean, I didn't think Eddie Hearn handled that contract extension correctly, because that seems to be in a distraction also with that announcement. And like we were just mentioning previously, I mean, he's a brand now. Anthony Joshua is a brand now. So we have to, he doesn't have that eye, again, he doesn't have that eye of the tiger anymore. I really believe that was a distraction. And it kind of had something to do with his focus on last weekend's fight.
Andre, can we agree that we need an Emmanuel Stewart to come in type guy, which there is no one that could equal the trainer that Emmanuel Stewart was? But think about, for the big men like Lennox Lewis, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, like, you know, Joshua has to learn how to fight as a big man. He's got to use his physicality. The problem in that fight against Usyk, he did nothing with his physicality. He didn't lean on him. Look at Lennox Lewis when he fought, you know, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, you know, great fighters he went through. And what did he do? He used his physicality. He used his reach. He had his jab. Now, southpaw versus conventional, it's a different look. But like you said, the right hand has to be a factor. You cannot just, you know, factor off of a jab. And another thing is, too, a southpaw fighter, their liver is up front. So what do you do in that situation? Right. You shoot a left hook to the body. Like, where was that? Like, that's pretty much, like, end of story. Like, if you hit someone, you know, to the liver, and especially when the liver's up front, like, I think he's getting bad coaching. So that's what I'm trying to say. I agree with you, is that I think that Joshua needs to get better counsel. I don't know if there's anyone on the planet better than Emmanuel Stewart. Obviously, he's not with us anymore. Great guy. Had the opportunity to talk to him many times. Wonderful man. And, you know, he's the guy that put together a lot of careers, even as on low on scale, Oscar De La Hoya, guys of that nature. You know, it's absolutely, man. Like, one of the best to do it. I think Joshua needs better tools and instruction. So I totally agree with what you're saying.
He caught him with that. He hit him with that left hook, like in the seventh or eighth round, and back Usyk up, and kind of changed the. You know, Usyk, like
I saw that,
got ghost for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I saw that
after that, mm-hmm. and he never did anything else.
And then follow up.
Yeah, he didn't follow up with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the one thing, I'm really not going to stay here too long on this, but, you know, we saw the friendliness with Jarrell Miller when they were scheduled to fight in the press conference. And then we saw with Andy Ruiz, him putting the belts on him. Hey, hold the belts, you know, take the belts, feel them, and slide the weight on you. Like, he's just the antithesis of the knuckle-dragging brute. You know, with the you know, vulgar language and disrespectful and all that, that's just not him. And it's worked well for him commercially with the Under Armour and the Beats and all the endorsements that he has. And he's great on the microphone. And, you know, he's universally, you know, he has that universal appeal and whatnot. And you could take him to many countries and all of that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, what we're seeing is you're not reliable on fight night. And
right,
and that just can't be. And you know, and you're not always going to be able to get these makeup exams to go back with the rematch.
Right.
And, right. But the saving grace for him is, even without the belts, he still can probably get 50 to 60,000 people in the show. Yeah. But it's just like with another bad loss, man, like they got to take the AJ fire thing. Like they got to wheel that out. Yeah. Can't have that in the building no more.
Coming out like Apollo.
Yeah. You know, so, I'm just sitting here like, you know, everything, like we said, man. all of the optics look great until they go deep. They read the, you know, they hit the gloves and it's time to go. And then it's like, we don't know what the hell we're about to get.
But I think you just actually coined a phrase called makeup exams. I'm going to steal that from you. I'm letting you know right now. That was amazing.
I will say,
hey, write it down, wild. Bro.
I will say though, once I saw him come out to that entrance, I was like, this dude, he going to F around and lose this. I was like, he going to really lose this. Cause I was like, it just shows a sense of like being arrogant. Like, you put in this big show. It's like Apollo when he got beat by the Russian.
It's like on a smaller scale, it's like Heard here in Northern Virginia when he called for D.C. He came out the Washington football team band and stuff. Anyway, and shout out to Wood for dropping the Big Baby mention, because I know he's trying to sign with Oscar Valdez Promotions at this point. Like, how am I not fighting? But Oscar Valdez is still a title holder at this point. But look, moving on, fellas. Johnny Sig, in your backyard, the T-Mobile Arena, you know, they're hosting the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder Part 3 fight next week, a week from today, actually, a week from this recording. And Tyson Fury is going to be defending that WBC heavyweight title. Armand, do you expect to see something different? I've been seeing your takes on this for a while now. I know what your line of thinking is, but I'm still going to ask anyway.
No, I mean... No. Tyson Fury gave it to you one way. Tyson Fury gave it to you the next. I will say this, the only... Slim. Okay, hold on. Real quick. Did y'all see the video that Deontay Wilder, him and his people released?
The training?
Where he's like, oh, I'm working the body now. And he's throwing like wild slides. I was like, bro, you don't get your hands ripped off. Look, man, I look. I'm not the biggest Deontay Wilder fan. And again, earlier I said it's like yin and the yang when I see Wilder and AJ. Wilder has all of the intangibles, right? Mm-hmm. I remember when Wilder was a kid, like a pup, basically. And then you just look at him, like, man, this guy's so raw. Mm-hmm. And he's got literally Thor's hammer in his right glove, right? Like, he's got the ultimate equalizer, Denzel. And, like, he never got better, but I guess you never have to when you can literally punch somebody's head off until these first two fights with Fury, right? The first one, I think it's pretty obvious, Fury won. Mm-hmm. Wilder relied on his power. Fury got up twice. You know what I'm saying? The second time, I don't know if it's, like, you know, the first time you get, you know, before any of us got in a fight the first time, you're scared of getting punched. It's like trying to talk to a girl. You're scared of rejection. Then once you get rejected the first time, you're like, okay, well, damn, that didn't kill me. I'll do this. Mm-hmm. And you saw what happened with Fury in the second fight. Fury was like, I respect your power, but I'm going to play with you because you Thanos. Don't know how to get punches off.
He's Thanos,
so he was like, okay, I'm not even playing with him anymore. And he just beat him up. Mm-hmm. I guess anything could happen, right? It's boxing. God knows we've seen wild stuff before. And again, you know, we all don't know necessarily the impact of COVID. Like a lot of these fighters have come down with COVID, and like we've seen in basketball and baseball, each player, each athlete, it impacts them differently. So we don't know how Fury could come out of it. Fury could be feeling himself, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But Fury beat Wilder, in my opinion, one style in the first fight. He absolutely dominated him in the second fight. I don't know what would happen, you know what I'm saying, in the year and a half off, but hey, I hope it's as entertaining as the first two fights have been.
They were great fights. You know, the first two, I loved them, and I can't wait for the third installment. The first fight, the drama in that 12th round, and, you know, Tyson Fury getting laid down, nailed to a cross, and, like, rising. I'm like, what is happening right now? And mind you, like, he was down earlier in that fight, too. Wilder, a lot of people refer to him as a one-trick pony. I've always liked his personality. I like his swag. He's not the best boxer on planet Earth. Like, you know, that's obvious. I think that under Breland, he had a great jab, you know, against Bernard Stiverne when he did that. In the first fight, I thought that was wonderful. I thought he was starting to show like form, but I think he fell in love with his power. Deontay Wilder did. And for whatever reason, what happened in the second fight, you know, I mean, Deontay, come on, guys, let's face facts. Like, Deontay made every excuse in the book. Like, he was blaming, like, I mean, at this point in time, it's just like, just, you know, maybe, you know, like, I don't even know where he was going with these excuses. Aliens abducted him. I don't know. You know, like, it's like, where is he? I love him to death. And I've always been a Deontay Wilder fan. He does have that one punch neutralizer that could change the, that's heavyweight boxing. And like you said perfectly, bro, like Armand, like you said it perfectly, is that anything can happen, especially in heavyweight boxing. Now, Deontay Wilder has special power, but the problem is for him, for Deontay, is that with Tyson Fury, you know, he mucks you up. He's a rough guy and he's very agile for a big man. Like he moves around the ring. He uses jab very well. He roughs you up. And he's very, like, mentally stable in terms of, like, being very strong mentally in terms of breaking you down. Like, he does not want to relent. He does not get off you. And Deontay needs to, I think, mentally be as equally strong, if not stronger, to get this. Now, everyone knows that's been listening to me on my podcast and on Urban Sports Scene, I've been picking fights wrong. I saw my hero, Evander Holyfield, get sent to hell, right? Like, and I was like, no, he looks great. They're like, John, he's 58 years old. I'm like, I love him. You know, he's going to be fine. Nope. And then my wife looks at me, and my stepdaughter looks at me while I'm watching the fight, and they're like, he don't look so good, John. I'm like, yeah, he looks like shit. I love him. I've had the opportunity to interview him several times, and I'll still give him a big bear hug when I see him. But geez, man, that was tough for me. But I honestly feel, okay, here I go. So people that are listening, bet on Deontay Wilder because I'm picking Tyson Fury.
Oh, no.
That's a good look for me because I want Deontay to win.
He says a great pick.
Hey, thanks, Ray, for letting me go after that. I can do something after that. Hey, now, first, I want to thank y'all for allowing this to be a safe space to actually be critical and analytical of Deontay Wilder and his boxing style. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's some brothers out here, man, you say the first thing wrong about Wilder.
Oh, my God. And so facts.
all kind of names that would be aimed at Stephen A. Smith. And I'm just like, man, the brother can't box. Like, what is it? Like, we can talk about so-and-so can't shoot, so-and-so puts the ball on the ground too much and fumbles. somebody can't pass to the right jersey. You're going to talk about a brother in boxing, the most obvious things about him, and you all kind of names and stuff, and I'm just like, let me just shut up. But I don't know what the hell to suspect or to expect in this fight. The time away for both guys, the fact that, you know, Tyson Fury, you know, I don't know how much stock I put into this, but there were some talks out there and some rumors that he was getting worked over or roughed up in camp, and that was part of the reason of why, you know, the fight was postponed. I don't know how much I believe. Like I said, I don't know how much stock I put into that. Looking at the results of the first two fights, I'm with Armand. I mean, I really can't say that things change. The training videos that I've seen, and that's the thing. Deontay Wilder, more is going to be less.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry. Less is going to be more. I need to get on my game.
It's all about the bomb. It's all about that bomb.
Yeah, to sit here and think he's going to become a technician. You saw the form trying to go to the body. Like, bro, you can't change the game in the ninth inning, bro. Yeah. He just needs to figure out how to keep more space between them, use the jab efficiently, and make it count when he does touch him, and then try to set up that right hand and figure it out. But to sit here now and to think after you didn't give a damn about boxing for like 42 fights, to think now that I'm going to go in here and hang my cap on my boxing ability against Fury, who's been boxing since he was like 8 years old, I just don't think that's the right way to go. And the brother's balance, his footwork, all of that stuff is just a mess. Like, dude, go in there and then they had the fake ass video with him trying to bench 300 and some pounds. What the hell does that have to do with boxing? This is not the NFL combine.
We're going in, bro. But it's all fact.
I know. Yo, I agree.
I just don't understand some of this stuff. Like, work with what you can do, and like I said, just and I'll credit him with this, where we didn't see it with AJ. It's gotten to a lot of fights in that 7th through 9th and 10th round period in there where Deontay was down, but that brother is like, man, I can't go back to whatever I was doing before I started by Walmart or driving, whatever it was. I can't go back to none of that. So let me figure out something. And he's able to bring big moments out of desperation, mm-hmm. except for with Brazil, who chose to stand in front of him and be a statue. I didn't get that. But
trouble.
Yeah, trouble. But I think that's really it, man. He has to find a way to bide his time. I mean, Fury is not the most heavy-handed heavyweight. We saw him, you know, what took place in the first fight. Try to get back to that type of pace and look for that opening to, you know, to land that right hand and see what happens. Stay away from the excessive costume stuff, too.
Good luck with that. We don't need more excuses.
Yeah, just come in there. Just cut a hole in the towel, throw it over, and get out there.
But I got to be real about it. It looked badass. He looked like a Transformer or something. Like, just like, you know, someone up in a Star Wars. I'm a sci-fi guy. I'm a sci-fi nerd. And when I saw Deontay come out, I'm like, yeah, man. I'm like, yo, dude. Wasn't no
Energon in the building that night.
What happened, bro?
Wasn't no Energon in the building that night.
No, they had no Energon cubes. there was no Energon cubes.
I totally disagree with everybody.
And here we go. Okay, we got one.
Okay. Yeah, let's get it.
What you guys are failing to realize in this fight, he is the coaching and the tutelage of Malik Scott. Mm-hmm. Malik has redefined Deontay Wilder. You're going to see a totally different Deontay Wilder next Saturday afternoon. And I'll be out there Wednesday. I'm going to the fight. I'll be out there Wednesday. I'm doing coverage. You will Malik Scott has tapped in to Deontay Wilder, got back to the fundamentals that he had when he was an Olympian, and was able to walk away with a bronze medal in the Olympics. You will see a body attack. You will see a body attack from Deontay Wilder. You will see a Wilder playing defense. And yes, he's going to set, I don't know, this is the thing though, he's going to set Tyson Fury up with that right hand. I don't know if Tyson Fury will be able to recover this time. This is going to be a defining moment in Deontay Wilder's career. Do not expect to see the old Wilder. And I know how Mike Tyson always says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Thanks.
And yeah. I agree with Mike with that. But now
you just gave me goosebumps.
We definitely have a different Deontay Wilder.
I really hope so. I'm a huge fan.
Al, man, God bless you, brother.
I'm waiting all while.
Hey, if Deontay Wilder goes to the body where his head is looking down at the canvas and he winds up, it's going to be a defining moment because it's going to be grand opening, grand closing. You know what I'm saying? Like
Chris Rock style, remember that? Grand opening, grand closing.
I'm with you. Like, again, I was with Wilder for so long. Like, my daughter's 11. Before she was born, I was like, oh, man, we finally have an American boxer and he's mowing people down. And it was like, the last fight was the culmination of all of, we talked about, like, before we started recording a fighter, I ain't going to name him, about wasted opportunity. And obviously, that's way too harsh for Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder is one of the, you look at his career, he's heavyweight champion of the world, or was. You can't say it was wasted. But, like, the potential, like, what he could have been had he just respected the crowd. It's too late.
Right.
Wood said it. I don't want to see Ben Simmons shoot three-pointers. You feel me? It's too late in your career. You're not that. Imagine if Shaq, when he got to Phoenix, was like, you know what? I'm going to expand my game. I'm going to start. It's too late. You feel me? You are what you are. And unfortunately, I don't even know what he is to this point, is the fighter who's capable of getting space. Because again, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder is a big man. Tyson Fury is huge. And we talked about this with AJ. Unlike AJ, Fury makes you feel his lever, his size, his girth.
Yes, sir.
And that was the entire fight. So, I mean, bro, when I was watching that second fight, forget the excuses, forget the quote-unquote rabbit punch, all this other stuff. You looked at the first few rounds, Wilder couldn't get a punch off. He didn't know how to set anything up. He didn't know how to put pop. I mean, he looked like a guy who had a few beers in a bar fight, just throwing stuff.
Right.
That's not going to work against Fury. It didn't work the first time. It definitely didn't work the second time. Hey, Al, I take this, bro. If Deontay Wilder comes out looking different, I will come back on the urban sports scene, shout you out, brother. Because, damn it, I don't see.
Get ready.
Well, if you go with my logic, like bet against me, I think that Fury will win. But then that means Wilder will probably win.
Hey, John, you may get like, your first. Hey, you may be on a winning streak now. You may have, like,
I might restart.
You know what I'm saying? You may have X'd out the curse. I don't know, man. Hey, I mean, like everybody said about Deontay, like Armand said, the first two fights are what it was. And I'm all about, man, let me see in the ring, because I've seen a lot of fighters, and we've seen it in the past, that have done things the wrong way for a few times. They've gotten with a trainer. They've shown videos. It looked good. They get in the ring until what Mike said. Because what Mike said is so true. Once they get hit and punched in the mouth, you go back to what you know. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. It's the problem. We're all creatures of habit. So when you start to hit a feel adversity, a lot of times what happens is you go back to what you're comfortable doing. You don't sometimes go back to, you don't go to what you trained on or what you've been trying to coach yourself to do. You go back to what you're comfortable in doing. So it's going to be interesting to see if he changes, you know, his whole game plan and decide in boxes, then, you know, we'll see what we get. But it's hard to see that, though, bro. It's hard. I ain't going to lie. It's hard.
But who said, how is Malik, whatever his last name is, how is he even, like, qualified or what makes him?
Come on, what?
What makes him official as the resurrector or the retool
I'm
guy?
I'm gonna let Al take this one. Even though Deontay did knock him out, though. He did knock him out. But
who has Malik fixed for us to say, oh, that brother can get you together? That brother can straighten you out. He can do that. Who has he done that with for us to believe that it's capable with a guy that was this badly flawed? Now, I will say this, Al. I'm with you. I salute you on this. I do think that he is being listened to. And I think the ass whooping that, and the washing that he received helped him be more receptive to,
right,
I got to change things up. But again,
right,
it's late in the ninth inning with two outs, a full count, and Kershaw's on the mound. It ain't looking good.
Well, I'm definitely expecting Malik Scott. I mean, he appears to be a fundamentalist. He appears to be a technician. I mean, he hasn't had the opportunity to display his skills on this level yet. This will be the first time for giving him the opportunity. Just like, I mean, Sugar Hill went in and did a lot for Tyson Fury and helped Tyson Fury out. Sugar Hill wasn't a big champion, world champion trainer either.
That's true.
You know, although he's up under Emmanuel, the great Emmanuel Stewart, we all know that.
Same thing.
But just Sugar Hill by itself hadn't had that opportunity until he got with Tyson Fury. So now, Malik Scott, he has that opportunity now, taking and that butt whooping that Wilder took in the past has humbled him. He was on his ego. He didn't listen to anything Mildred Taylor had to tell him. He wasn't listening. He was a chump in camp. He wouldn't listen to anybody. He did what he wanted to. He had a bunch of yes men around him in that camp. So he's been humbled now. This is what I'm saying. We're going to see a different Wilder based on this tutelage and based on the path of fights that he had with Tyson Fury.
Can I ask you a question? What about his legs? Like, Deontay has very thin legs, and in the heavyweight ranks especially, you got to have your legs underneath you. And the legs were like the big complication in the second fight. And I think both fights were great fights, like, in all honesty, even though I thought Fury kind of won the first one. I don't mind the draw. Deontay, like, I got so excited. Like, I'm a big Deontay Wilder fan. Like, I just jumped off my couch when he knocked Fury down, and then Fury obviously comes back and does his rally, and it was a hell of a round. The second fight, right, I thought it was compelling just because I was like, there's a guy here in Tyson Fury that's just taking on a very badass fighter. Because I think Deontay Wilder is a very strong, ambitious fighter, has a lot of strength, obviously, we know, but I think that one of his limitations is his legs. Are they doing anything in your knowledge to prepare with his leg treatment?
Yeah, based on from what I hear coming out of camp, he definitely had a strength and conditioning coach. That was some BS that we saw. That was just what they were showing on his little clip with him doing a little power lifting. That was nothing. He definitely has some, you know, he's been training and doing a lot of strength and conditioning with his legs because to his excuse, his legs went out on him in the last fight, you know, because the reasons was he had that 40-pound costume, the wing costume on. So to his defense, He has definitely, with his strength and conditioning coach, he did emphasize that he needed some help with his legs. So, you know, we'll definitely see if that works for him next week.
I have another question for you too, real quick, guys, not to steal this, but where does he get that power from? Because, like, you know, it's horsepower. It's all from the hips down. Deontay Wilder has extreme power, but with very thin legs. Like, where does that come from? Like, is it just natural? Like,
That's Alabama mojo or something.
That's country boy. That's a country boy thing. That's a country boy thing.
Yeah, that's all that is.
Can't define that.
That's straight Alabama mojo.
Grown man strength is what we call it, Johnny. I want to say this, guys. A Deontay Wilder win might be just a good trend for boxing that's heading in another direction, just like we're finally getting big fights. We're going to talk Canelo and Plant coming up. We're just seeing a lot of changes, and we're seeing finally fights that we actually want to watch as boxing analysts, as boxing fans. And another trend that's heading in the right direction, Bud is finally getting a good fight, fellas. on November 20th, of course, Terrence Bud Crawford will defend his WBO welterweight world title against my man, Sean Showtime Porter. Al, Deshaun Porter, or Max, I'm going to go to Wole, then you, Al. The Showtime Sean Porter, who we've seen struggle against certain guys. He struggled against Ugas. He also struggled against Adrian Broner at time. Adrian Broner dropped him late in that fight, but we've seen good showings too. He had a good fight against, of course, Errol Spence. He fought Keith. Sean Porter, I love him because he'll fight anybody, man. Yeah. He comes forward. Does he have a chance against Bud Crawford? And thank you that Bud Crawford is finally getting a fight, that a signature fight on his resume.
Yeah, I think he does have a chance, to be honest with you. You look at the resume of what he had to see, you know, going to his fight. I mean, and I was talking to Al about this before. You look at that resume. If you look at any welterweight, he may have the most impressive resume. Like, really, like, study his resume. He's battle-tested. And it's something that we talked about with Bud. He's not battle-tested. I don't care anybody. We can talk about skill all you want, but Bud ain't battle-tested. Right. Like, he's not. And getting into the, you know, it's cool to see it, you know, to see it on tape, try to train for it. But I feel like when you get in the ring with Showtime, Sean Porter, that's a whole different animal. You know what I mean? You know how much I love Errol Spence. I think Errol Spence, when before the crash, was pound for pound the best boxer in the game. That was me. You know what I mean? And yeah. You saw what he had to go through fighting Porter. You know what I'm saying? What he had to go through. And I thought that fight was tailored for Errol because Earl's a killer body puncher. If you don't crowd Errol, he can get you with the body shot. You know what I mean? And he still made it hell for Errol Spence. So to me, going into this fight, if I'm Bud, don't feel safe. Don't think it's safe because you ain't seen nothing for you to feel safe. You know what I mean? I keep telling everybody, right, like, his toughest fight may have been Gamboa, and Gamboa at that time was done. And Gamboa still at the beginning of the first couple rounds gave him some competition. So this is a fight he has to take serious. I think Porter has a good chance to win this fight. To be honest with you, I would still pick Terrence Bud Crawford. But I think if anybody is discounting Porter, you're definitely doing yourself a big disservice. You ain't watched this man fight.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. My only thing, I believe that Sean Porter is going to come away with the victory in this fight. Ooh. I mean, the pressure that's going to be applied, he has no answer. Bud has no answer for that pressure. And they're very,
he got wood washing his hands here. I have to address that.
Both of them might be able to get in right there.
Familiar with each other. I mean, both of them came up together in the amateurs. They sparred against each other. They know each other very well, you know. So this is going to be interesting. They're real cool. So I was glad to see that, you know, this is manifesting and coming, you know, thanks to the WBO for putting the pressure. Definitely. Because other than that, we'd have never seen this fight, you know, for the sanctioning bodies to put that pressure down in order to, you know, or Bud would have had to lose his belt, which he definitely doesn't want to do. Bud is going to come out there. I've seen Bud. It's another guy from here, from Cleveland, Miguel Gonzalez. He beat Bud up in the amateurs. You know, he's from Cleveland, Ohio, too. Sean knows him real good. Sean is going to collaborate with him and see what pointers that he can get. You know, so it's going to be interesting. The pressure, like I said, Bud has never seen pressure like he's going to see in his life. You know, good luck to him. But Sean wants that belt because Sean wants a rematch. He wants to run it back with Errol Spence. Believe that.
Al, I agree with you on many levels about what you were saying there. And Sean Porter, he fights like a linebacker. Like, he's in your ass the whole time, and he's just throwing, and he's very rough. It's not a style you can really prepare for. Mm-hmm. You could, like, you know, have like some, you know, premeditation about what you want to do against a guy like that. But Sean just throws, man. He's one of my favorite fighters, and also a very charismatic personality. You know, I've seen him on Fox Sports do many things, and he's a very likable guy. He's a very fun guy. And at the end of the day, I think he's also a very intelligent guy. Now, we got to understand with Sean Porter, he's been in, you know, a fight affairs where he's lost three major fights. So now, right now, it's for him to come up and show up and redeem himself. Like, and the guys he lost to, guys, people, if you don't know, like, they're all world-class world championship fighters.
Yeah,
like, Sean Porter is going to come into this bad boy, and this is make or break. Like, I don't mind when a fighter loses. It's how they adapt and how they make changes in return. Sean Porter, like, in this fight with Terrence Crawford, I think is going to be excellent. Both guys have been out of the ring for over a year. When they get into the ring in November, I think it's a great fight. Like, again, I'm not going to pick anything because everything I've been picking is crazy. I'll tell you who I'm rooting for. Who I'm rooting for is Sean Porter. Even though I was a Terrence Crawford guy, I'm going Porter. I like him. I like his style. Dude, is there a better dressed person in boxing? Like, you know, and just he's got so much charisma, and I think that he just fell a little bit short. Because if you look at those losses that he had suffered,
they were
very close. They were very close.
Beat Keith. I still think he beat Keith.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wood is on you, man.
At first, you know, we need these types. Boxing needs these types of fights. Yeah. You know, when I can sit here and it's very difficult for me to get to a definitive winner, that's a good thing. And, the majority of these fights, probably 75, 80% of these fights, as soon as they announce them, I'm like, oh, that's a wash in so-and-so's favor. Mm-hmm. This right here, you know, Bud is a bit of an enigma for me, because we haven't seen him, even though he was undisputed at 140, and I think Unify maybe at 135 or whatever, I think. It hasn't been against the greatest, you know, set of dance partners and whatnot. And then the clash of styles here with the football, you know, I don't know, I'd say maybe strong safety, maybe. you know, that type of pressure in your face and whatnot, and the fact that, you know, Sean is a consummate professional. I don't know what happened with that. You know, it was an anomaly with the you guys situation. I don't know what was going on there. Maybe he just was overlooking him a little bit. He had to cut his braids off for the weigh-in and whatnot. I don't know. But the way that he turned it up, the way that him and his father locked in to make the Spence fight really competitive, I was not expecting that. Yeah. I thought Spence was going to take care of him. And I thought, honestly, I thought Spence needed to take care of him to really solidify that distance between him and the field. And when it didn't happen, I was like, damn. But I still thought Spence won the fight. Yeah. Here, I just think, you know, Porter definitely fights with a ferocity and a pace that Bud is, and Bud is 33 or 34, I think. And he does not fight at that. My man from England, Kell Brook was having success
against him. Yeah, he was.
I can't really sit here and tell you much on this. to be honest, I'm just burning time right now. But I'm going with Bud.
You're on point. You know exactly what you're talking about. The thing that with Sean Porter, like, his physicality, I think that's a big thing. And you made a great point about Terrence Crawford. Like, he's coming from lower weight categories. Sean Porter's a big guy. I've had the opportunity to meet him, and he's very nice. And I've seen him train, and he works his ass off, man. You know, and the thing is, like, that's going to be a factor in this fight. I also think the fact that Terrence Crawford goes from conventional to southpaw, but Sean Porter is an adaptable type of guy. Like, he's a fighter. He's like an old school throwback guy. And, you know, he's big. He's fighting in a weight category that you know, I think is great for him. I think it works, but naturally he'd be a much bigger guy, you know, like, but I think it's wonderful that he's got the opportunity to set the record straight, if you will, because there was a couple fights that were very close that he should have won, I thought.
All right. This is all fine and good. So here's the thing. When I think of Bud and Sean, first off, to go back to a point Wood made, I'm glad we had this form, right? Because in my past, I like Terrence Crawford. I'm a huge Terrence Crawford fan. But even the slightest bit of criticism that you put out there about Bud, you get all of these people from the woodwork that you hating them. And I'm like, bro.
Right.
They don't get it. They don't get it. I know, bro. I'm with you.
Don't tell me how this guy is the boogeyman at 147 when it was clear everybody worth a damn in your division before you resigned with Top Rank worked at PBC, right? We knew this. This is something that we all knew. Don't tell me how fight after fight you crying about, hey, man, nobody wants to fight me. Sean Porter's wanted this fight for at least 2.5, 3 years. Yeah, that's number one. Nobody ever says anything about that.
Yes,
number
sir.
Two, much like you, Wole, I'm a big Spence guy, you know? Hopefully he puts his little demons to the side, whatever, bomb. Don't tell me that you only are going to fight Spence in a 50-50 fight. You can't draw. You can't draw. Yeah. Terrence Crawford is a phenomenal fighter. And long story short, I think Bud wins. Only because though there are a lot of questions about Bud, I mean, the only question about Terrence Crawford is his competition. Before he fought Kell, which was completely stupid in so many different reasons. I have no idea why they would even put him in the ring versus Kell Brook in 2020. Right. The fight he fought before that, I forget the guy's name.
Mean Machine.
They didn't rule it as a knockdown. He got dropped. He got dropped, my buddy. They didn't rule it as a knockdown, but he absolutely got dropped. That doesn't mean anything like Costa T and China. We all know the expression. But when you are battle-tested like Sean Porter, it throws a variable into the mix that I don't think... I mean, we here are talking about it and the powers that be on television. You can't watch any type of legitimate boxing in America analysis, right? Because everybody is skewed to their own powers of political, you know, whatever they're tied to, right? So Max obviously works for ESPN. Max is in a very bright boxing mind. But of course, he's going to talk about how how Terrence Crawford is the best at 147, this, that, and the third. I think Terrence Crawford has the talent. We've all waited so long, at welterweight for Terrence Crawford to get in there with somebody who's worth the price of admission. Like, we want to see the best fight the best. We've all said it so far when we talked about this fight. I think on this talent, Terrence Crawford beats Sean Porter because Bud has this ability, unlike Spence, where it's like Bud wants to beat you up and he wants to embarrass you in front of your moms. He wants everybody to see what he did to you. He wants your girlfriend to look at you crazy. You know what I'm saying? He wants to embarrass you, bro. Mm-hmm. Whereas Spence, it feels a lot like, well, Spence is like, oh, man, I want this to be pretty. I want to showcase my skills. Bud wants to embarrass you. I think that that's what got Spence a lot of problem versus his fight versus Sean, because you can't look pretty versus Sean. It won't happen. Sean is like, whether you want, think he's a strong safety, a linebacker, I call him a pit, man. You're going to get in there with him. It's going to be ugly. You're going to have the scars afterwards. It's like trying to wrestle an alligator. At some point, you're going to get clipped. But matchup, that style fits better to what Bud does. Because Bud is like, all right, bet, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to beat you up, and I'm going to laugh. I'm going to take your money. I'm going to take your girl, and I'm going to laugh at you afterwards. That's the vibe that I get from Bud. Whether or not he's able to do that on this stage, that's the ultimate question. But every other box, if you're checking off the boxes, if you're doing like a sliding scale, Terrence Crawford passes all the tests for me.
No, I agree. He's one of my favorite fighters, if not one of my favorite fighters on planet Earth, and my top pound for pound. Sean Porter, I saw him working out at Mayweather's gym out here in Vegas. Dude, he strapped something around his head with a string with a tennis ball at the end of it, and he's just hitting this thing, like working on muscle memory and reflexes. I'm like, damn, this guy, he's intense. I watched him work out at Mayweather gym, and I was like, man, this guy is really, really passionate. And that's what he brings to the dance. Like, he's a trained fighter, but I think, like we were talking about before, when someone gets hit or something happens, your natural instincts come out. And you had said Pitbull, like, you know, a dog. Like, he goes out there and he just wants to pressure you. He wants to use his physicality. He's obviously a very strong guy, in tremendous shape. Again, I will not give any predictions on anything. And if you want to make money, if I do give you a prediction on anything, like, I go against what I have to pick.
Listen,
this man, way you will make money.
The Sean Porter pick, you can make a lot of money because, you know, he's going to be an underdog going into the fight. But
oh, big time.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. We're joined by Reginald Woodson, Armand Lee, Al Jones, Johnny Signorella, and, of course, the homie Wole. Thanks for tuning in. Guys, we got a couple topics left. We have, of course, Canelo Plant to discuss. I know we've been chopping it up for a minute. And we got, Johnny, we got a Jake Paul question for you. I don't know if anybody else wants to necessarily address that.
Yeah, send that over to him, because I don't know.
And then we're going to land this plane with this news that came out this past week about, you know, just the Olympic boxing matches being fixed. And I'm sure, guys, you know, I'm interested to hear your takes because it hit close to home for me just based on the fact that I covered the Russell family and Antoine Russell, and he ended up getting, I think, a bronze medal, which is ridiculous. Yeah. And now we're kind of seeing why. And I just love the information that's coming out because it's shedding some light on the corruption that exists at the Olympic level. But Wole, take us into this big fight coming up. We had the best press conference in a while with Canelo showing some street fighting techniques and showing he can curse in the English language again, baby.
It's so funny, man. So we all know November 6th goes down, the WBA, WBC, WBO, and the ring. Super middleweight champion Canelo Alvarez. I call him the pound for pound best boxer in the game. We'll take on IBF super middleweight champ Caleb Plant. So Johnny, I'm gonna start with you. Does Plant have a real chance to take out Canelo Alvarez?
I like Caleb Plant, but not really. You know, come on, I'm gonna keep it real. I'm gonna keep it 100%, guys. I like Caleb's story. I think he's a very good guy. I know he went through a lot of adversity in his life and went through some trials and tribulations. And respect to him and his family. I just don't think he's ready. I mean, Canelo's been doing his thing through multiple weight classes. Yes, he is picking opponents where he looks very good, but he looks very good with picking those opponents when he fights them. Not that Caleb is bad. Caleb's a good boxer. The only complication for Canelo in this fight, in my opinion, is that Caleb is a good boxer. Look at the history for Canelo. Israel Lara gave him a hard time. Mayweather gave him a hard time. There's a lot of boxers that gave him a hard time. So is Caleb that guy? But the problem is 13 knockouts, I think, that Caleb has. Like, you got to show, I think, in my opinion, Canelo, you got to show him a reason to fear you. Like Canelo said at the press conferences recently, and by the way, I love this, that Canelo learned how to speak English and he got all the curse words. The fuck out the beer. I'm like, Canelo's talking English, but all he's talking is curse words. Hey, you get the fuck out of here.
That's perfect. Yeah, man.
I'm like, what?
I like Caleb a lot. You know, he's a good guy. He definitely has a story. You know, he's been on the show. I like him, but I really don't think he has a chance against Canelo.
No.
You know, I would advise him to use that footwork, you know, get on that bicycle. That's the only way. And I know Canelo's going to try to walk him down. So, I mean, I wish him the best of luck that night, man. That's Canelo. Oh, easy.
So for that people night, that are listening to my thoughts, bet on Caleb Plant.
Right.
Nah, don't do that. Don't tell anybody to bet on Caleb Plant, man. This right here is easy money, right?
Look. Oh, dude, I'll be targeted.
Yo, they're gonna come after you, Johnny. Yo, you tell people to bet on Caleb Plant. Oh my god. Yo, so honestly, I have no sympathy for Caleb Plant. I want Canelo to go so hard versus Caleb Plant. Only because seriously, man. I have so much respect and I lost a lot of respect for Canelo back with the tainted chicken, you know, thing a few years ago, right? But then what he set out to do starting last year, and unfortunately, Caleb Plant wanted to play whatever games in terms of the purse. Obviously, this fight was supposed to happen on Mexican Independence Day. Canelo was like, dog, I want to unify. I want to fight. He was like fighting every 2-3 months. And he was like, you know, we hear the thing about, yo, Canelo doesn't fight these type of fighters. And I think that's been a bit exaggerated only because who you want to, I mean, outside of Maul, and I don't necessarily know if Maul makes things look different, right? Andre, I don't want to hear anybody talk about Demetrius Andre. I don't want to hear that no more. Like, stop. He's not on the level of Canelo Alvarez. You watch Andrade fight, and you know what time it is. Callum Smith, excuse me. Canelo fights him. And everybody's like, oh, well, you know, he's just a tall guy. Boom, 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 boom. You saw him the other weekend. He laying Bama's out, right? You go down the line. Canelo, yeah, Lara's a phenomenal fighter. Floyd, we don't even need to share expletives. We don't even know. You don't right. need to do the pleasantries. The motherfucker Canelo is a monster. You know what I'm saying? So, Caleb Plant, I think we all understand. Solid fighter. God bless him. You know what I'm saying? Canelo wants to unify. Right. He came into 2020. This is why I respect Canelo, even after, again, the chicken thing, whatever, with Golovkin. He came into this year, right? He ended last year the way he did. And he was like, dog, I got a mandatory. This is going to be Scooby Snacks. I'm going to go all year. I'm fighting everybody every quarter. This is what he wanted to do. And then he was like, I'm going to unify. Nobody really cares about Caleb Plant outside of that. You know what I'm saying? This is going to be Billy Joe Saunders. We heard, okay, he's a really good fighter. And he's slick. Billy Joe did what he needed to do for those first few rounds, and it was interesting. But ultimately, you knew what was going to happen in that fight. And the same thing goes here. It's only a matter of time. Whether he gets caught, whether he just gets out executed, it just literally depends on how Plant wants to play it. But same song, different verse. Canelo, with what he came into this year intending to do, calling his shot, I mean, I know how boxing is covered in this country, but I'm being dead ass. I'm so impressed with what his intent was coming into this year and how he did it. All the drama, all the red tape and politics in boxing, we all know it. But he still did it. He still delivered. It's almost like, I know, Wale, you're a wrestling fan, right? Yeah. And not to get too crazy with it, but like when you are the guy, you actually have to carry the sport, right? Like there's an added burden. So whether it's what Jordan did in the 90s and what Magic and Bird did in the 80s or what LeBron is trying to do now, when you are the face of a sport, Floyd, right, whether you love him or hate him, there is an added burden in trying to carry a sport that so many people either don't know or foolishly talk about. But Canelo checks all the boxes, bro. When he's up, it is an event. And the fact that he was able to navigate through COVID, through the BS with the purse with the Plant, which, again, I hope he beats the dog mess out of him for that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not even a Canelo stan, but like I'm so happy with what he did this year that I hope he leaves, no doubt, and I'm sure he won't.
Right.
You know what, Plant? I like Plant. I do. But
everybody got a butt with Plant.
Yeah. But I'm looking at Sha'Carri Richardson when she got to the Prefontaine Classic and she was on the track with the Jamaicans.
Yep.
And she hadn't been out there with that level of competition before. And when she did, she got her doors blown off. And I'm sitting here looking at Caleb Plant. You can't sit here for three and a half years plus against inferior competition and then going here against the guy that you're going against. I don't know how we put those two together. And I'm gonna bring up one name. The Uzkoteki fight didn't age well because everybody's beating Uzkoteki easily now. But there was this cat named Thomas Awimbono, from Ghana, but he lives in the Bronx. He went 10 rounds with Caleb Plant in 2017. In 2018, a year later, Jesse Hart out of Philadelphia. Jesse Hart stopped I got to check my man's name again. Thomas Iwimbono. He stopped him in the first round. And Jesse Hart don't even have hands like that.
Right.
So how did this dude go 10 rounds, go the distance with Caleb Plant and turn right around and come back the next fight against Hart and get blown out like that? So Feigenbutz, that's not a curse word. That was the dude's name. Feigenbutz, Mike Lee, the Subway guy. I just don't know how you make that leap to go up against a guy who's top three, top two, or number one in all of boxing. I just don't know how you make that leap, and you just haven't been pushed. I mean, and then even we can go to the performance against Caleb Truax. You don't do anything special against him.
Yeah. And the world was watching. The world was watching.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because that was the time to make the statement to give us something to really be looking forward to this undisputed fight for super middleweight. And I just, I just was like, you didn't press that dude. You just boxed. And so, like I said, his ring IQ, he has a little bit of side height advantage, some tail of the tape stuff is in his favor. He's very astute business-wise. If you listen to him on Twitter and IG, he's talking about his profit sharing and his 401k and all types of stuff. None of that is going to mean anything when it comes to fighting.
If I start talking about 401k advice, I know you about to get your ass whooped.
You're already thinking about retirement at that
already.
Point. That's almost like
fight? You talking about, bro.
That's almost like coming out in your ring music is church music. You know you're about to get lit up.
You can get holy down the ramp, down the ring. You can get holy.
All right. So when are all of you guys coming out to Vegas? Because we all need to hang out together. Because this is amazing.
I got to put it together.
I'm dying right now.
Hey guys. I hate to go here, but I have to. It is what it is. And I know many boxers, including my man Gary Russell Jr. and many people like Armand, they dislike Jake Paul and all of the attention that he receives. However, he recently created a promotional brand, Most Valuable Promotions, and he just signed Amanda Serrano, who, guys, she's arguably the most popular female boxer in the world. So, Johnny, I'm just throwing this to you. And fellas, if y'all want to jump in, you can, of course. Is Jake Paul here to stay? And what does this mean for the future of boxing with YouTube guys now getting in the ring and selling pay-per-views more than Manny Pacquiao?
Can I start with Amanda Serrano? I had her on my show. She's really great. She's an excellent fighter, and you're 100% correct. And I gotta say, the Pauls did hook up the fighters on that night with extra bonus incentives, and we want to see our fighters get paid. Like, these guys, they're at least training, and I'm not trying to be a company man here. I'm not getting paid by these companies or whatever, but the thing is that at least they're trying, they're fighting. Anyone that gets in the ring and puts themselves out there, do I think, it's a little at first tacky, and I think it's a little bit gimmicky, of course. But then it's like, if they want to stand the test of time and they really want to do this, and if they make the sport better and help fighters get more, financial gain, that's big for me. Like, I want to see people get gainful employment. And money. So I gotta say, I can't hate it. I don't like their hairstyle. I think that's a little it's kind of troublesome, but it is what it is.
Well, with YouTubers, everything on YouTube, a lot of stuff on YouTube, it's trendy. I really don't see Jake around. I'd give Jake maybe about 5 years, man. I really think that he's at the plateau, more so at the plateau of his career now. I don't see him being around. I'm from Cleveland. I went to that fight there in Cleveland, Ohio. I had to go support. I was glad he did a lot for the city. He did a lot for Serrano. He did a lot for Montana Love, put Montana Love on the map. He did a lot for the sport, and he opened up the sport to a lot of different eyes of people that may have not even thought about boxing at all. But as far as it, I mean, the trend, he's riding the wave. I give him about 5 more years to be around, and then he'll be done fizzled out.
You know,
great point, man. You know, 100% is that it's bringing eyes to the sport, and people are talking about right. it. Young kids, my stepdaughter, 12 years old, she's talking about boxing now. Why? Because of that. I'm sorry, right. Wood.
I mean, that's anecdotal stuff, and if that's what's happening, that's what's happening. But I think, you know, again, what I was saying earlier with AJ, like, you can only fool the fans so long before the people in the stands start like, am I getting my money's worth with this shit? Like, what is this?
That's real. That's real, though.
Yo, 100% real.
I'm a Washington football fan. Like, I'm 3 games in, and I'm like, do I want to spend any money on this shit? Like,
right.
So, that's get there, your money. I love it. Get your money. But I think all I got to do is look at the situation right now with Triller, and they can't do nothing with this fight with Teofimo Lopez and George Camboso Jr.
Man, that's a whole nother discussion. We didn't even have that on the docket. Dang.
Yeah, no.
They got $5 million. So what I'm just saying is, when you're new, the old money, the top ranks, the PBC with Al Heyman and Bob Arum, the top rank. And a couple, you know, Eddie Hearn inside and whatnot. You just can't come in and be too much of a disruptor when it comes to boxing, because you got to have the stable to do it, you know. And Jake Paul, that name alone is not going to be able to feed and drive and sell tickets for a roster full of fighters. I want to see him try to go in here and incorporate some of these things that they do in the UFC with Fight of the Night, Knockout of the Night, or whatever. I'm all for it. But I'm just saying, the boxing audience and the boxing business is just tricky. And like I said, Triller right now, they will probably do anything to give that fight to us to pull it off. They're like, we don't want to do it. With Lopez, right. I mean, and Lopez is an undisputed under 25 right. years old, and they can't do nothing with the fight. So I'm just not all that optimistic that Jake Paul can really lead a whole lot of change, because it just don't work in boxing.
How funny was it with on Triller that when Snoop Dogg got Al Bernstein high on the air and De La Hoya was like, let's go, baby. I'm like, what is going on?
And that's a perfect issue, I guess, what I have. And, you know, I got my beard is getting gray. Maybe I'm a curmudgeon, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I feel – and I'm going to take a different perspective. You know, my entire career, fortunately, I worked in media, right, whether it's sports, now national, and news. So my criticism isn't to the Paul brothers, per se. I feel a very way – and I talked about this earlier. I feel a way – when you get nonstop coverage and we're treating Jake and Logan Paul like they're Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk, right? And they're covered more than the brand new heavyweight champion, like completely legitimate champion of the world. And this isn't their fault, right? They have their brand. They're going to do what they're going to do. But if we start to allow things, and this, you could take this and you can apply this into all types of things that are happening currently in our country outside of the sports world, but I ain't gonna take it there. But when you allow things to be covered that should not even see the light of day relative to real life tangible events, we are then moving in a place, where you don't know what's you don't know what's up and down. You don't know what's east to west. There's no way on this earth that Logan or Jake Paul should get more media time than the fight that we saw last weekend in a boxing environment, right? But that's exactly where we are. He hit the nail on the head. Teofimo Lopez had arguably the best fight of the year in 2020.
Yes, having sir.
Fourth quarter. Beat Lomachenko, no question, bomb. Star-making performance. Not only was it a star-making performance, that's right at around the time where my man Tank beats Leo, right? We had a phenomenal performance. A lot of questions about Ryan Garcia. All of these things are happening at the same time, same weight class. There's a real excitement. COVID happened. I mean, not COVID happened, but whatever happens, happens. And then boxing, the sport, has been reduced to basically, like you said, Johnny, like Snoop getting Al Bernstein high. So a sport that has worked so hard to get out of this quote-unquote circus and all this other stuff, right? You have legitimate, young, talented, hungry, phenomenal, entertaining, energetic fighters, and we're doing this. I can't blame that on Jake or Logan, right? That's not their fault. They're gonna hit a lick. This is their lick. They hit it, bomb. So I celebrate them, congratulate them. But the powers that be, we need to hold them to task, to be like, hold on now. Imagine if the big three is covered more than the NBA. That's a problem. You feel me? If the Harlem Globetrotters get more coverage than the Los Angeles Lakers or the Milwaukee Bucks. That dynamic is kind of where we are in boxing. And the sustainability of the sport does concern me. But again, I'm an old man. So this
I
could
love
be
all your points, Armand. I love all your points, Armand. Like, my thing is that, do you think it was a blame on COVID or just like the state of the game with boxers? Like, I mean, people don't want to fight, and you can't hate people that, you know, want to come out. Of course, not saying you in general, but people that want to come out and make some money and earn, like, the money's there. It's a cash grab. And that's what the business has become. Back in the day, like we talked about the 90s earlier to start the show, like people fought each other, man. Like we had De La Hoya versus Trinidad and Sugar Shane Mosley, Holyfield and Bo, and all these great fighters going out there and fighting all the time. Like, is it just a new generation boxers that don't want to fight?
But that's kind of my point. When you look at the end of 2020, we were getting the fights that we wanted, right? We were getting.
Yes,
I talked about Canelo. Canelo came into this year. It's like, I'm going to fight all the time. You're going to see me on YouTube. So, again, I'm not blaming the actual subjects in this, right? They have an opportunity. That's not their responsibility. I don't even know if they're – I think they are. You would know better than me. I don't even know if they're, like, true diehard fans of the sport, right? So they don't have an obligation for the betterment of the sport. But if you consider yourself a media, a legitimate journalism media company outlet, and again, Canelo Alvarez, Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Terrence Crawford, Sean Porter, like these are people who are A, talented, A, charismatic. I mean, Canelo looks like a damn movie star. You know what I mean? Anthony Joshua looks like, you know what I mean? Like if you were telling me that the only way you can market boxing is by these YouTube sensations, right? Then it's a failure on promoters, because clearly there's a way you can cross promote that. Mm-hmm. And it's a failure on the media outlets that we spend a ridiculous, and I'm talking about ESPN and Fox Sports, obviously, right? Where your cable bill is expensive because of those prices, right? I don't know. It's a great frontier, and it's an opportunity for promoters to probably get in it. But it is a bit of concern that Triller can't get Teofimo Lopez's fight off the ground. Mm. So
we need to get fighters fighting more. Like, the more current fighters on the planet, there's a lot of talent in boxing right now, man. You know, there's so much talent in boxing right now. These kids, they're athletes. The athleticism is amazing. We just need to see that more. We need to fight more frequently. Like, Four Kings, guys, I'm going to throw this one out there, and I'm not getting paid for this. I think it was the Showtime documentary, Hagler, Hearns, all the great guys, all the badasses. Like, they all fought each other, man. Like, we need that now in the sport of boxing more than ever. And I'm glad we're starting to see it, guys. Yeah. So on a positive note, we're starting to see, like, big fights come up. We got, like, we unpacked today. We got Canelo coming back out against Plant. We got Deontay Wilder, you know, coming back out against Tyson Fury. You know, there's a lot of great stuff to look at here. So let's move forward, fellas.
Ooh, man, I put the last question out there. I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at it, but we just found out last week, or this past week, I should say, that an investigation revealed that some boxing matches in the Olympics were fixed specific to the 2016 Rio Games and also the 2012 London Games. And what's crazy is a lot of guys who cover the sport of boxing, you know, I'm not going to put their names out there, but they said, man, it's finally being brought to light. This has been happening. And I remember talking to Gary Russell Sr., and he said, Antoine clearly should have won gold in 2016 at Rio. But, you know, that's just how the Olympics are, and we'll take it. It's still a dream come true. But that has ruined a lot of people. Yep. A lot of boxers' dreams have died there. I just want to get you guys' thoughts on what this, you know, means moving forward for Olympic boxing. And do you expect there to be a fallout from all of this corruption, which, of course, we only know the past two Olympics, but it could be, you know, more Olympic games that were, you know, involved in this sort of, I guess, scandal, if you want to call it that. What do you guys think? Did you guys know this was occurring? And where do we go from here?
It's whoever,
jump in. Sorry.
It's just crazy that out of all the stuff that's there, the one problem child in the room in the professional realm is over here in the amateur game, and it's still some, I'll say, for fakery, but you know I'm putting what I'm trying to say. But it's just, why does this black cloud why does the black cloud stay over boxing? And it's crazy because in talking to a lot of the younger fighters and watching the guys that are transitioning from the amateur ranks to the pros and even coming out of the Olympic programs and whatnot, these dudes are such, they're like fawns or something. They're humble. They've just been led around, do this, do that, and be here and all of this. And you know, you got USA Boxing overseeing all of this type of, you know, the whole thing and whatnot. But it's these athletes are just so different from, you know, high school basketball and football players, because they don't, you know, some of these guys don't graduate or whatever. It's just such a fragile group of people for all of this stuff to happen to. And honestly, I'm not going to stay long here. Honestly, I just don't think that there's really the concern from the larger community of what happens. I don't think nobody really cares. This story ain't going to be no E60 minute short about this shit. It ain't going to be on Real Sports. Don't nobody give a shit. Y'all are just dudes who go in. Y'all are just men and women who go in here, get punched in the damn face. These guys, you know, we knew the thing with the Conlon kid when he gave the middle fingers. We knew the situation from, you know, the one that was in there with Tony Yoka and Joe Joyce. I'm just wondering, like, what was the real payoff in doing any of this, like, for a gold medal? Because you know, it's no guarantee that a lot of the medalists, period, it's no real guarantee that any of those guys get over into the pro ranks and really become marquee fighters, household names, or champions or anything. So I'm just dumbfounded that this was, because it was like six-figure payoffs involved and whatnot. And it's like, for what?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, man, because, you know, I'm one of my earliest boxing memories is seeing Roy, right, in the Olympics. And when that's like the inception point, right? That's the beginning. That's where everything you start, or you kind of begin your journey into being a fandom in boxing, it's almost kind of like, well, yeah, of course. You know what I mean? So when you hear something with the gravity of this, right? Because think about it. The Olympics should theoretically play almost kind of to what college football is, college basketball is for those respective sports. The world is watching. You see these people and like, well, hit it perfectly, man. These guys, humble. They don't know a lot of times better. I mean, greener than green. You know what I'm saying? And they're taking advantage of. And like, it's an opportunity that we, as a boxing, you know, society fans that we are, this could be a launching point. But what happens is it becomes confirmation bias, right? We all know, oh, that's just boxing being boxing. Boxing is a circus, right? So what's the reward? Like, what's the point of doing that, right? Of muddling up the Olympics, which, you know, if you buy into the propaganda, it's all about purity and like we don't have professionals, you know what I mean? All this other stuff. But I will leave you this, because I'm not going to spend too much time with it. it's really odd to me that if this sort of misconduct and corruption that has happened, has been admitted, has been proved in Olympic boxing, if this happened in swimming, if this happened in track, we would be inundated with these type of stories. You haven't heard a peep about this. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Not a peep. And that's I think, as a fan, a bigger problem, right? Where it's so, I mean, some of these stories, like, they just gone back two Olympic Games. Again, you can go back God knows how long and tell that there's been corruption. But this cloud just stays over the sport that it's almost kind of like, oh, that's boxing, huh? And that's a problem.
Armand, do you think what if they went and pitched somebody said, do you want to spend the money to Brian Gumbel to go get a segment on this? Do you think he'd even stop talking and consider that shit? Or he'd be like, man, if you don't know why
he's boxing. He go, with no bass in his voice. It's boxing. You know what I'm saying? Like, what everybody would say.
Yeah. It is, man. And piggyback off what you said, it's very disappointing, you know, and it's because it's boxing. You know, it's disappointing that the corruption is going on, and we have children that started fighting since, you know, boxing since they were 8 years old and looking forward to this moment. And to rob those children, you know, underprivileged children, underprivileged children, It's very disappointing, man, to put them on the stage and knowing it just goes almost like with life with the underprivileged, man. It's an uphill battle, you know, and it's bad that it has to end that way for a lot of kids because they get discouraged. You know, the children get discouraged, man. They've been fighting for this all their life to get to this point, and to just have it just taken away from them unfairly is very discouraging, man. And I wish someone would have, you know, did have the funds and the money behind them to expose this and try to come up with a better solution for the corruption. I mean, it's bad, man. I hope that someone can, you know, some of the committee members can come on there and you know, try to revamp that whole boxing, that whole amateur situation in the Olympics.
Look at how boxing was treated. I mean, to jump in front of anybody, but look how boxing was treated just this past year. You know, we had guys who had fought on ESPN that ended up back in the Olympics. You know, some of them got in either DAZN and ESPN. We had fighters who had 2 and 3 fights on ESPN Plus and DAZN. And the kid Duke Reagan and the kid from Virginia, can't think, Keyshawn Davis, I think. We had guys who had been on TV already. And then they get over to the Olympics, and I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about doing some kind of coverage on the Olympic boxing. I don't even know when the hell that stuff was coming on. I mean, it was so hard to catch any of it.
And again,
y'all don't give a damn about this sport. So it's like, I think like the Paul brother was appropriating from hip-hop, like, stop playing with me, man. Like, why can't we help this sport get out into a good, on a good footing? And it just be treated like you said. If this stuff was happening in diving, or swimming, hell, right. It'd be a story if it was the horses being mistreated for the equestrian stuff,
bro.
right.
Absolutely. And my thoughts on the Olympic Games for boxing over the years, when I've been watching Evander Holyfield, Roy Jones Jr., you know, they got robbed. I thought obviously in their Olympic Games, but There is a positive to take away from this. They took a negative and they made it work. They became world champions. That's what a boxer is supposed to do. That's what guys of those, you know, kind of accolades are supposed to do. I've met both guys multiple times, and they are just wonderful people. They're very inspiring. What could I say more about, like, how greatly influenced I was by meeting them about my life and my code of conduct? The thing is, I think the Olympic Games, what they should do is definitely have more, just with boxing in general. Like, I mean, it's a very weird sport. It's unlike anything else. It's a red light. What do I always say? The red light district of sports. Like, that's what boxing is, you know? when it's at its best, there's nothing better than it, man. Like, oh God, a Turugati Ward, you know, my goodness. Yeah, Ali and Frazier, like, you know, Foreman and Ron Lyle. Like, if you look at some of those fights, Holyfield and Bo won, like, there's no other better sport. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. There's times and times again where I have like friends and family members over and they'll watch a good boxing match. Like, they'll actually catch one here and there. We get one every once in a while, guys. So people that are listening, they happen and they're like, wow, this is like incredible. I'm like, this is why I love it. So we show up. It's like the pretty girl that we all want to deal with, you know, for, you right. know, from time, because we just keep coming back for the good loving. And so when boxing gives us that good loving, you know what I'm saying? Like, we'll deal with the bullshit right. every once in a while. Like, all right, you give me some shit every now and then. But you know what? You're loving so good. Here I am. That's boxing.
It's that crazy meter, right? You know, it's the crazy meter. That's what you do, whatever, how good it is. You know what I mean? So if she's super crazy, that means she's really, and you're still dealing with it. You already know.
J-Lo.
Right, this is a whole other podcast we could get into right now, bro.
Oh, man. That's a whole different story. Right. Into. That's a whole different life story.
What
man.
Did I start here?
That's a whole different life story.
You didn't, hey, man, didn't know how to get out of that, where you were going.
I had to. Look, bro.
Yeah, that's the boxing after dark segment. Yeah.
Hey man, this has been a dope ass show, man. I appreciate everybody. Before we dip off on the show, I want to give everybody an opportunity to tell our listeners about their platform. So, Wood, I'm gonna start with you because you got the Michigan hat. You know, a Michigan fan. I'm a man
in Ohio. You in Ohio with a Michigan hat on?
Look, me and Wood talk about this all the time. Oh, man, I see my man Al with the Ohio State thing. We still cool. We gonna talk later about that. But I'm gonna start with my man Wood.
All right, go Buckeyes, baby. Go Buckeyes.
Hey, honestly, I appreciate y'all. I appreciate the invite and coming on. You know, I've been on a bit of a hiatus with boxing because of the COVID cancellations, the business issues, the Valdez thing, the decision by the sanctioning bodies. I just needed a break from it. And then with the fans of the sport, like we said earlier, you know, you try to talk about just to say Tank needs to be a professional and make weight. You can become a Uncle Tom or a Coon or something. And it's like, well, I mean, everybody been making weight for, you know, since the beginning of the sport. I just want the dude to be able to fight for a title. So I just had to take a break. So Bite Down Boxing has kind of just been in limbo for a minute. I'm looking forward to reconnecting with the sport after this this Fury situation. Awesome. Of course, taking the opposite person that John picked. So I'm looking to get back into it. You know, I didn't even try to go to the Jake Paul fight, and it was here in Cleveland. It was some stuff I wanted to do on the undercard and whatnot. So I'm gonna come back to it. But right now I'm cooking with my It's Always Personal podcast, which is on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's just me talking about grown man stuff as a mid-40s brother. Hard as hell right now to get guests, by the way. And then also, you know, I talk about a lot of stuff over on my Pay Me No Mind YouTube channel, entertainment stuff, movie reviews, album reviews, and whatnot. So that's kind of the two places where I've been the most active.
Dope, gotta man. Have Johnny on your show, bro.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was just thinking the same thing, man. I'd love to bring you on my show and talk about music, man. I'm a big
guy. I gotta link up with all of y'all.
Yeah,
please.
Man.
This
yeah,
has man, been man. Wonderful.
And Al, I'm gonna go with you since you know, even though you're Ohio State, I'm gonna go with you. Also, man, tell the folks about the radio show and everything, my man.
Yeah, thank you so much. First off, thank you once again for having me on, man. It's been a pleasure. I'm on In the Ring with Al Jones on every platform. Also on 1490 WERE, newstalkcleveland.com, 1490 WERE AM. If you're in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and you can reach me every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on newstalkcleveland.com. I have all type of guests on from referees, Richard Steele, to Derrick James, which is a coaches. So I have all the fighters on, like I mentioned, from Jerry Cooney to Larry Holmes. I had the old champions on, the new champions on, up and coming. So, you know, every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on NewsTalkCleveland.com. All on every social media platform that's in the ring with Al Jones, on all social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, IG, YouTube. I'm on all social media platforms, in the ring with Al Jones. And then my personal page is AJ in the ring on IG.
Dope. All right, Johnny, we're going with you next, man. Platforms, tell them everybody what you know you got going on, what you got cooking, the show and everything.
I'm on Chatterbait. You can get me on Fans Only. No.
I was like, where you going with this?
I was like, hold on, though. What's happening?
At Boxing Music John, you'll find me. I have a podcast I do weekly. I have different installments. I have actors on, musicians on, fighters on, people from all walks of life. So it's I recommend just going to the Twitter at Boxing Music John. You'll find all the shows, and you will not see the Chatterbait stuff. You got to pay for that. So if you want that, right, you can email me at right, drummer John Sig.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yahoo.com.
Wait a minute.
Hey, Johnny, I love watching you after the fight, though, man. And that Vegas weed hits different. You know, I'm beyond those days, man. But listen, I tell Wally all the time, because I'm up. I'm a night owl. I'm up all night. And, you know, you're in Vegas. You're a few hours behind. But when you're doing your post-fight at 3 a.m., brother, I'm watching. Trust me.
And you notice I had a little puffy. a little sesh.
Oh man. Hey Armand, man, tell folks about the Quarterly Report podcast, and also, you know, how they can catch you on social.
Man, before I do that, man, I just want to shout out all y'all, man. Wood, Al, and Johnny, along with both Ray and Wole, man, I appreciate y'all. You know, a good boxing discussion is kind of hard to find, you know what I mean? So anytime you can have intelligent but also still entertaining, you know, conversations, man. It's really, I really appreciated this time. So shout out to each and every one of y'all brothers, man. I really did enjoy this. Thank you so much. Yeah. As far as my show, check me out on anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever, Google Play, the Quarterly Report podcast. You know, we break down boxing, NBA, football, pop culture, music, the whole nine, man. Try to give a blend of personality, but also different type of sports analysis that we don't necessarily get on the larger platform. So check me out on Twitter at Quarterly Show. That's Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-L-E-E Show. And again, Quarterly Report. We spell quarterly Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-L-E-E. So thank you very much.
We want to thank you all for being on the show. You know, we appreciate you. Appreciate you all. You can check us out at the home of the Urban Sports Scene at Empire Media at EmpireMedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire Media shows, as well as other great content. Hey, Ray, you want to say anything before we close the show out, my man?
Nah, just I echoed everybody else's sentiments, man. This has been awesome, dude. Definitely. Like, sometimes you know how you do shows and the time seems to drag. This time, you know, we've been on here 2 hours and I ain't even tripping like that.
Yeah, me, it's facts, been
a lot
man.
Of fun, man. And, facts, man, and I appreciate the insight, real talk. And hey, guys, let us be that part of that movement that gets boxing back to that level that we want to see it at, man. From our childhood and from the previous generation. I know I sound old by saying that, but hey,
you sound kind of old though. But it is what it is. But we the same age though, but it is what it is. Anyway, man, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Yiddy, Lucis, A Mega. Lead us out, big homie.